कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभा All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Shaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye Nashtapraye Shabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Bhagavatir Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, entitled Rishabhdev's Appearance, or Rishabhdev's Appearance in the Womb of Meru Devi, the Wife of King Nabi. Reading from text 15. I'll read the translation and purport. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offense because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Purport. The priests were certainly unhappy to have called the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha for such an insignificant reason. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. The Lord is engaged in various activities and the pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. The pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy, and when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. The Lord is unseen even by demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. By calling on the Supreme Lord, the priests of King of Nabi Maharaj proved themselves unintelligent. Nonetheless, the Lord came out of his causeless mercy. All of them therefore wanted to be excused by the Lord. Worship of the Supreme Lord for material gain is not approved by authorities. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chaturvidhya bhajante mam jana sukratino arjuna artho jigyasurarthi jnani cha bharatarshava. O best among the Bharatas, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Initiation into bhakti begins when one is in a distressed condition or in want of money, or when one is inquisitive to understand the Absolute Truth. Nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. They are accepted as pious, sukritinaha, due to their inquiring about the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. However, the Lord is so kind that even though disturbed, he feels the desires of such beggars. He fulfills the desires of such beggars. The pure devotee is Anya Vilashita Shunya. He has no motive behind his worship. He is not conducted by the influence of Maya in the form of karma or jnana. The pure devotee is always prepared to execute the order of the Lord without personal consideration. The Ritvij, the priests at the sacrifice, know very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. And because they considered themselves under the influence of karma, fruitive activity, they begged the Lord's pardon. They knew that the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Kumirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katamayam Dadati Shwapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurum Shri Utapadagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Dasajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Asaktam Krishna Chaitanyam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Taparine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Niti Namine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauravishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriya Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurapakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all the devotees for this Saturday Srimad Bhagavatam class. All the devotees are in the temple, and there are many who might be hearing online, watching it, or hearing it on FM. So, seek blessings of all the Vaishnavas for being able to speak something worthwhile on this subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the third chapter, or the fifth canto, third chapter, titled Rishabhdev's Appearance from the Womb of Meru Devi. A very beautiful section as we read the translation. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining the life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offense because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. So it is a section where the Ritvij, the priests in the kingdom of Rishabdev, Maharaj Rishabdev, they are offering their prayers right from verse number 4 up to this particular verse. They are offering their prayers, and further we will see how the Supreme Lord is going to reciprocate, is also going to offer very sweet words in the praise of the Ritvij as well as King Nabi, and eventually, of course, we will see the appearance of Rishabdev. So just in this particular section, we will try to see a brief recap of what's happening to get the context of what's happening in this up to this particular verse. And then for this particular purport, we will see four different aspects. One is about four different subtopics we can talk about as wanting a son like God. And second is about being conscious and considerate about the time, about the various activities and engagements of the Lord. As well as we can try to apply it for his representatives, especially great souls, very senior devotees. And we will also see about priesthood and about the mood of humility and gratitude, which is so beautifully expressed here by the priests of King Nabi. So just to have a brief recap, we find in this particular canto, fifth canto, where Priyavrat, it begins with Priyavrat, where he was basically engaged in austerity, performing austerities in the mountains, and Swayambhu Manu felt that he's supposed to rule the kingdom. And when Priyavrat did not agree initially, eventually there was a discussion between the Mahajans. You can say this is a mediation by the Mahajans and for the Mahajans, where Swayambhu Manu was involved and Narad Muni, who was the spiritual master of Swayambhu Manu, they were involved. And eventually, when the matter was not settled, eventually Brahma was called to settle the matter. So finally Priyavrat agreed to rule the kingdom. It is said that eventually he got also sort of affected or taking into the administration of the kingdom. And at the fag end of his life, he again retires. In the meanwhile, it is said that he begets seven sons, or he begets 10 sons. Three of them become sannyasis of the highest order. And seven of them, he gives them the tract of land to rule them. That basically from his own chariot, when he's chasing the sun planet, when he's chasing the sun god, so that the sunlight is distributed throughout the world. So what happens is by the rims of his chariot, there are seven oceans and seven islands created. So when he has 10 sons, so basically three of them, as we just discussed, that three of them become sannyasis, and the remaining seven sons get these seven islands to rule. So very wonderful way of handing over a legacy, of handing over the property that he has so wonderfully made some demarcation of, and basically he was ruling the world. So even this in one sense is not so easy. We may say that, oh, there are seven islands and there are seven sons. Anyway, three have already taken sannyas. So we might say seven sons and seven islands. Even for this, unfortunately, in the modern world, there will be, in the modern times, there would be a discussion that there would be, fights among this. Which particular island will I take? Like we find even during after just Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur departed this mortal world, left this mortal world. After that, we see that even amongst great souls, there can be discussions about which rooms we need to occupy, which rooms can be Ganga facing. So it may appear seven islands and seven suns, and what's the big deal? But even in then, we can find that there has to be some, I mean, either they were so elevated enough to accept that, or there must have been somebody who must have allotted it so that they are very peacefully settled with the seven islands for the seven suns. Eventually, of course, yeah, I mean, he also has one of the daughters who gets married to Shukracharya, and he has three more sons from another wife. Who now we may say, okay, seven islands are already given to seven sons. Now there are three more sons from another wife, but then they get elevated to the post of Manu, as a Manvantaras. So that in that way, everybody gets their share. So very wonderfully, Priyavrat makes this division. So when Priyavrat took charge of the kingdom, it is said Swayambhu Manu went to the forest, went to the mountains to perform austerities and practice devotional service very seriously. And now when Priyavrat has ruled for many years, it is described 11 arbudas, It comes to around 110 crores of years. Quite a unimaginable time. 110 crores of years, 11 arbudas of years. So, of course, when his sons, as we discussed about 10 sons, of them there is Agnidra, is the eldest of them. When he takes charge of the kingdom, at that time, Priyavrata also retires and takes to spiritual life very, very seriously at this point of time. So when Agnidra takes charge, at that time you see that he has a desire to have a son, and eventually he also has a desire to go to the Pitrulokas. He wants to be a inhabitant or a resident of Pitruloka. So considering like this, he goes to the Mandara hill and performs worship for Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma comes to know about the desire of Agnidra, the son of Priyavrata, so Lord Brahma sends a celestial damsel of the name Purvachitti, and there is a the entire second chapter is basically a description of the interactions between Agnidra and Purvachitti, their discussions, how Agnidra gets very attracted to the feminine form of Purvachitti. And of course, even Purvachitti as such also gets attracted to Agnidra when he offers very flattering words. So eventually it is said that they beget 9 sons. Agnidra gets 9 sons, one for each year. And at a later point of time, Purvachitti leaves this mortal world and goes back to worship Lord Brahma. And that we see in many of the damsels like this. We see about Menaka, comes here for some time, stays with Vishwamitra Muni, eventually goes back. Or we see about Urvashi also like that. For some period they stay in the material world, and for a particular purpose they come, and afterwards they just go back. So Agnidra gets 9 sons through the womb of Purvachitti, headed by Nabhi. So just like Priyavrata had this out of 10 sons, 7 were given these islands. In the case of Agnidra, it is said these 7 sons, headed by Nabhi, Kimpurusha, Harivamsha, Ilavrata, they are given 9 varshas. Amongst the island, the nine different tracts of land, the 9 varshas, and which the varshas are also named after the sons of Agnidra, with Nabhi, Kim Purusha, Harivamsha, Ilavrata, like this. So these 9 sons get married to the 9 daughters of Meru Devi. Sorry, Meru. 9 daughters of Meru. 9 sons get married to the 9 daughters of Meru. Like you find the 4 sons of Janak, 4 daughters of Janak Maharaj, Shiratvajan, of course, the cousins. So 4 daughters of Dasharath, and 4 sons of Lord Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughan. So these 4 get married to 4 daughters of Janak Maharaj. So here we see 9 sons, Janak Maharaj and Dasharath's sons and daughters. So here we see 9 sons get married to 9 daughters of Meru. So Nabhi gets married to Meru Devi. So Nabhi is now just like Agnidra, we saw desiring a son, he went to perform austerities in the Mandara hill and worship Lord Brahma. In this case, Nabhi is desiring for a son, and he performs austerities, and he wants to perform a grand yajna, a sacrifice, in order to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Agnidra had a desire for a son, and he also had a desire to become an inhabitant of Pitraloka. Whereas Nabhi, we see, had a desire for a son. He performs austerities himself, as well as he performs a grand yajna, inviting qualified priests in order to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And this yajna, in one sense, we can see what's currently going on in this particular section, as Prabhupada mentions. Although Nabhi performed austerities and sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was pleased by his devotional service, not simply by the sacrifices and the penances that he has performed. This is something very beautiful to note, and this is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is clearly mentioned how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is attracted to your devotional service. Is attracted to devotional service, bhakti, bhaktyavam abhijanati. Or as Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam Priti Purvakam. When there is loving devotional service being exhibited by the sadhakas or by a practitioner, then the Lord is very pleased by this. And that we see even from Prachetas, right? From Prachetas, 10 of them, 10 brothers are performing penance and austerities. So when the Lord is pleased and appears, the Lord is pleased not simply by the austerities. If we talk about the austerities, who can perform more austerity than Hiranyakashipu, standing on one leg for thousands of years? But the Lord is not pleased only by such austerities. Rather, the Lord is extremely pleased by the mood of devotional, by the devotional service that the practitioner performs. So Prabhupada mentioned in the verse number 2 that although Navi performed prescribed duties and sacrifices, the Lord appeared due to his devotional service and not due to his sacrifice. So we'll see these four different subtopics of this particular purport, that wanting a son like God, being conscious and considerate of various activities and engagements of the Lord and his representatives. And third is about priesthood, and about fourth, finally, we'll talk about the mood of humility and gratitude. Talking about the first aspect here, wanting a son like God. Nabhi desired for a son like Vishnu, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions in verse 13 in the purport, although Nabhi Maharaj wanted a son like Vishnu, wanting a son like God is also a form of sense gratification. A pure devotee wants only to engage in the Lord's loving service. We'll try to see the different references in terms of wanting a son like God. And then in verse 14 in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the son, Maharaj Nabhi was inclined to performing great sacrifices for begetting a son. The son might be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but such a material desire, be it great or insignificant, is brought about by the influence of Maya. This seems to be like, you know, Prabhupada saying this is like Hirachor and Hirachor. In both cases, the person is a thief, whether somebody is stealing a diamond or stealing a cucumber. In both cases, he's considered a thief. Of course, in terms of proportion, in terms of the intensity, it's quite different. So it might appear to be how Prabhupada is just mentioning it like a form of sense gratification. But obviously, there are various references to understand this. And in the very same purport, in verse 14 itself, Prabhupada mentions, it was no fault on Maharaj Nabhi's part that he wanted a son. It was no fault on Maharaj Nabhi's part that he wanted a son. He wanted a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the best of all sons. So like Prabhupada mentions about Arjuna in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in some places he is condemning the mood that, you know, after coming to the battlefield, he is now not desiring to fight, basically appearing to be irresponsible. And at some point of time, Prabhupada also mentioned that he is exhibiting the mood of compassion of a Vaishnava, that after seeing the people assembled on the enemy side, he does not have a heart to kill all these great personalities. So similarly here, Prabhupada is giving different versions about different talks, different thoughts about, you know, wanting to have a son like God. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see there are two different references. Like we see about Atri Muni also desired for a son like God. We see in chapter Canto 4, chapter 1 and verse 20, 4.120, where it says, Prajam Atma Samam Mahiyam. So kindly be pleased to offer me a son exactly like him. His Atri Muni is offering his prayers to the Lord. And Prabhupada in the purport mentions, although he wanted a son exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this desire was material. This desire was material because he did not want the personality of Godhead himself, but only a child exactly like him. If he had desired the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his child, he would have been completely free of material desires because he would have wanted the Supreme Absolute Truth. But because he wanted a similar child, his desire was material. This is about Trimuni's section, Prabhupada is mentioning that although he desired to have a son like God, that even that, of course, in a very relative terms, even that is considered to be material. And then in 10th canto, we find the reference of Vasudeva and Devaki, when they have a desire to have a child, and Krishna's appearance. So this is in 10, 10, 3, 37, 38, or 10.3.37.38, where the words used are Madrisho, Madrisho Vam Prita Suta. So here it is mentioned that this is Krishna is speaking to Mother Devaki basically here. Since I am the best of all bestowers of benediction, I appeared in the same form as Krishna to ask you to take from me the benediction you desired. You then expressed your desire to have a son exactly like me. Padrasho Vam Suta. And of course, in the very next verse, in 39, in the translation, Srila Prabhupada does mention that you wanted to have me as your son. So there are both versions are being used here. You wanted to have a son like me, and in verse 39, Prabhupada says, you wanted to have me as me means this is Krishna. You wanted to have God because God is the Krishna is speaking this to Mother Devaki. You wanted to have me as your son. But interestingly, in this 37-38 purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, if we want to invite the Supreme Personality of Godhead to this material world, it takes a lot of tapasya. It takes a lot of penances. Giving the reference of Vasudeva and Devaki, he says, Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, that they did tapasya for 12,000 years. 12,000 celestial years. And after this, after so much of penance and tapasya, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is invited. So Prabhupada says, rather than trying to do that, rather than trying to invite the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world, one should have a desire to practice spiritual life, perfect one's life, and go back home back to Godhead. So rather than inviting the Lord in this material world, it would be better that the soul goes back to the spiritual world. So there are different references which Prabhupada mentions about wanting to have a son like God. Of course, there are those great souls, pure souls who want to have children, basically in order to expand the mission of the Lord. Particularly, we see in the famous example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who desired to have a ray of Vishnu, who wanted to have a son who can help him in spreading the mission of Krishna consciousness, the mission of Lord Chaitanya's movement. So, of course, these are very great souls who have such pure desires. So, the second aspect we'll try to see in this purport where Prabhupada mentions, Prabhupada is mentioning the pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy, and when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. So the Lord is engaged in various activities, and the pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. And in the next paragraph, he mentions, last paragraph, not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. So we'll try to see this aspect that we should be conscious and considerate of the time or the various engagements and activities of the Lord, and we can try to extend this, apply this even for great souls like the spiritual master or very extremely senior devotees. That when we approach them, we should be conscious and considerate of the time involved, of their time involved, right? So one is, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, do not unnecessarily disturb for material gain. Do not desire to see whimsically for own sense gratification. And then we can try to understand further aspects on this. So one is about do not unnecessarily disturb for material gain. That means do not unnecessarily disturb the Lord or his devotees for material gain. Because Prabhupada, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvedha Bhajante, which is quoted in the purport, that there are four kinds of pious people, four kinds of pious people who approach him. And they are considered as Sukrutina. They have some material motives, especially Artho. They are distressed and they are approaching the Supreme Lord. So basically, there is a material motive in approaching the Lord. And for that, they might perform some penance, they might perform some sacrifice or whatever. So they are trying to acquire some pious credits, but their motive is, material, which is why we see, even especially in India, there is so much of respect given to the saintly personalities. But sometimes people want to just bother the saintly personalities just for blessings, please give me blessings that, you know, and of course there'll be a list of great list of material desires which they want to fulfill, and they approach the saints for this. And that's how you find particularly Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He would sometimes go to the crematorium and chant the holy names of the Lord. He would feel that at least in such places people will not come to bother me. Sometimes it is said he would chant in you know, various different places where people will not approach him. They would feel hesitant. How can we go to the crematorium? So sometimes great souls are disturbed by people who have material motives. We know of this old lady who was carrying a log of wood on her shoulders, and she's praying to the Supreme Lord, "Oh Lord, please come and help me." And when the Supreme Lord actually appears, her desire is, "Please shift it from my right shoulder to my left shoulder." So you know, people may not sometimes understand in what way they can actually get maximum advantage of the Lord or of the great souls. Sometimes we find devotees may be distributing books in the railway station, and somebody may come and ask, "Has the train already left?" So, well, they can get so much that their train for back to Godhead is already going. If they purchase the Bhagavad Gita or Prabhupada's books, they can book their ticket back to Godhead. Like we have this Bhadra campaign, they can by having the Srimad Bhagavatam, they can book their ticket back home, back to Godhead. But on the contrary, they are just asking the devotees who are distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, "Has the train already left?" Like this. So people usually have such material motives, so they do not understand that how for paltry reasons, insignificant reasons, they are disturbing the Lord or the great devotees. As Prabhupada says, do not desire to see whimsically for one's own sense gratification. During Prabhupada's time, we can see, I believe this must be in Delhi. So at that time, Tejas Prabhu was his secretary. So there was a postman who was adamant to see Srila Prabhupada. So this postman comes in with a letter with some courier and says that, "I want to get the signature of the recipient." This is basically this address to Prabhupada. He says, "I want to get his signature." So Tejas Prabhu says, "Well, I will get signature from Prabhupada and get it back to you." He says, No. I cannot give it to you. I want to see Swamiji directly." So Tejas Prabhu says, "Well, he's a very busy person. You know, he's a founder Acharya of ISKCON. He's a world Acharya, spiritual master. He's quite busy." But then he does not agree for this. Then finally, Tejas Prabhu says, "Okay, give the letter to me. I will go to Srila Prabhupada and then get it signed from him and then come back and give it to you." And the postman says, "Well, how do I know if that is actually his signature?" So he doesn't agree to that and says, I want to personally go and see Swamiji." And finally, Tejas Prabhu had to come to Srila Prabhupada and inquire, you know, this there is a mailman who wants to hand over this mail, this letter or this courier directly. And Prabhupada says, "Okay, let him come in." So then this person goes in to meet Srila Prabhupada, meets Swamiji, and then he hands over the letter. It is said that he spends about 10 minutes there. We don't know what happens in their conversations. And then when he comes back, he has a broad smile and says, "I have seen Swamiji. I have seen Swamiji." Of course, in one sense, we can say it's an innocent desire. I mean, he had a desire to see Swamiji because, but then we should be conscious of not unnecessarily disturbing them. Do not desire to see whimsically for one's own sense gratification. Again, when Srila Prabhupada was in initial days in New York, those places, there was one Solomon who says that, "At my whim, I would go and see Srila Prabhupada." That at my whim means, that means whenever I desire, I would go and see Srila Prabhupada. Just imagine in today's time, a world Acharya, you know, what is his status? Is it anybody can just barge in? Eventually, of course, there were secretaries and there were, you know, security guards and whatever, so many other aspects. But in the initial period, we find that how Srila Prabhupada made himself available. But then, unfortunately, there were people who would sometimes take undue advantage. So he says, "I would at whim go and see Srila Prabhupada." And And even more adding to that, he says, not just that, I would not be attending his programs, like Prabhupada would be giving this Bhagavad Gita courses, you know, 3 times, 3 days a week. Says, I would not be attending his courses, but I would go and meet him at my whim. So Prabhupada did entertain in the initial days. Eventually, when the same person, showing off, you know, he comes with his girlfriend. At that is the time when Srila Prabhupada rejected to see him. Otherwise, there were times when he would even stay with Prabhupada, even overnight. So they would just have a desire to see, and they would get an audience of the great personality of Srila Prabhupada. Only when he went with his girlfriend, at that time, Srila Prabhupada rejected, saying that, I am busy, I have a lot of translation work. So please excuse me, like that. But otherwise, sometimes people have a very whimsical desire to see for one's own sense gratification. We also have this great example of the mother-in-law of Srivas Thakur, who wanted to just see Mahaprabhu's dance. She says to Srivas that, please, I will not disturb. I'll just be watching in some corner. Just allow me to be inside. It's like sometimes people have this whimsical desire to just see. But we are talking about great souls, talking about the Lord, or as great souls, we should also be conscious of their time that we are taking of theirs, their valuable time that one is taking. So basically, do not invite great souls, even for social functions, for one's own personal prestige. We should be conscious of that. In this case, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has personally arrived in the arena of Nabi's sacrifice. When Nabi is performing the sacrifice along with the priests, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has personally appeared. That's not a very simple thing. Even the great demigods perform sacrifices. The Supreme Lord does not personally appear every time. Here we find he has personally appeared in the kingdom of Nabi. So we should be conscious of whom we are inviting and of their valuable time that they are otherwise engaged in. So it's like if a great soul comes to a small person, like say for example if Ambani or Tata Birla, you know, if they come to a tea stall, it is the glory of the tea stall owner, right? He would put on the Facebook, on the media, basically. It does not add anything to Ambani or the Tatas and Birlas, but it means a lot to the tea stall owner. He would take a selfie, he would take a photograph and put it on the media. It means a lot for him. Similarly, when we invite the Supreme Lord, or we attempt to invite the Supreme Lord or his great or the great souls, like spiritual masters or very extremely senior devotees, we should be conscious of their time, not to unnecessarily disturb them. We should be conscious of that. Because when we in a neophyte condition, we are only thinking about ourselves. We are only thinking about ourselves. We are only thinking about our prestige. And in a mature condition, mature state, one is conscious of what the other person has to go through. How much the other person has to extend himself in order to make this particular event. And that is why we find in the neophyte condition, we feel, why the spiritual master is not visiting my home? And in a mature condition, one would feel, why to unnecessarily bother him? He has given so much of instructions. Let us think about that. Let us meditate on that. Let us try to apply some things of that. Of course, and that's why you find great. That's why you find those who are mature when they have some social functions. So it is said that once one of the sannyasis he asked the senior devotee, why is it that you did not invite me for the housewarming at your place, the new house that you have taken? And the devotee feels, Maharaj, we didn't want to disturb you. And then Maharaj says, well, I would have been very happy to grace that occasion like this. So those who are mature, they feel why to unnecessarily disturb. They will have this kind of thought process or the consciousness. In another case, we find one of the sannyasis was told by a senior devotee, Maharaj, we are having some housewarming ceremony or some great function, but we request you not to come. This is being so considerate of the time and engagements of the great souls. So basically, we should know what we should know, what we should feel, what we should understand. We should know that the great souls, they are not obliged to attend the function. we should know that we should feel that it is an insignificant reason to invite. As Prabhupada concludes this purport here, they knew that the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. For paltry reason. So we should know that they are not obliged. We should feel that it is an insignificant reason to invite. And we should also understand that they have better engagements to perform in the mission of Lord Chaitanya, in the mission of Krishna consciousness, to spread Krishna consciousness. So this is how we should know, feel, and understand. At the same time, great souls may want to reciprocate by attending the functions, by attending the social functions, in order to inspire and to reciprocate for the dedication of such devotees in the mission of Lord Chaitanya. That is up to them. But from our side, we should not want to unnecessarily disturb that or take the time of great souls. So do not try to whimsically see, or do not try to unnecessarily disturb for material gain, and do not invite great souls just for personal prestige. Moving on to the third aspect of this purport, Prabhupada mentions about the priests, that is the Ritvij. The priest at the sacrifice knew very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. And because they considered themselves under the influence of karma, fruitive activity, they begged the Lord's pardon. So in terms of priesthood, we find there are different calibers of priests. There are different sacrifices are performed for different purposes. So we find in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada mentions 1.12.34 that the success of a sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. The success of a sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. So we'll see two, three examples in this. There was this Marutta, King Marutta, who wanted to perform a Shankara Yajna. And he tried to invite Brihaspati from the heavenly planets. So when Brihaspati came to know about the invitation, so it's like they are considering, okay, where has the invitation come from? So when Brihaspati sees, oh, this is a king from the earthly planet, so it doesn't appeal to him. So he just rejects it. He says, I'm not interested for this. So Maruta has a desire to perform yajna. He tried inviting Brihaspati, but Brihaspati feels it is too insignificant for him to come to the earthly planet to perform a yajna here. So on the advice of Narad Muni, King Maruta was told to approach his own brother, who was Samvarta, to become a priest. Narad Muni advised this. And eventually Samvarta became priest and performed the yajna, Shankara yajna. And by dint of that, he acquired a heap of a golden mountain. The heap of that. So that's why you find later on the Pandavas, are particularly Arjuna, goes when Yudhishthira Maharaj wants to perform the Ashwamedha yajna, Arjuna goes to the northern region, and where he gets a lot of this golden plates and ornaments which is kept there. This was King Marutta. Similarly, you find Indra, who wanted to perform a yajna sacrifice. He had offended his spiritual master Brihaspati, and they have lost their kingdom. The demons have taken over. So now when he wants to perform the yajna, they approach Lord Brahma. And on the advice of Lord Brahma, the demigods approach Vishwaroop, the son of Tvashtra. So Vishwaroop says that acceptance of priesthood is decried as it causes loss of pious credits. When the priest is performing the yajna, it is said that causes loss of pious credits. We find that very graphically in Vishwamitra Muni, when he's performing yajna, when he's performing sacrifice so that Trishankhu can, you know, ascend to the heavenly kingdom. He uses all his tapobal. So basically the tapobal is getting sort of extinguished, basically reducing. So Vishwaroop says, acceptance of priesthood is decried as it causes loss of pious credits. But still, that does not mean that nobody agrees to be a priest. He says, but still, it is a great honor that all of you have approached me. So I would accept this great honor and I would perform the sacrifice on your behalf. Of course, Lord Brahma says that you have to tolerate that he would also offer a secret offering of oblations to the demons also. So that's another aspect. But basically talking about priesthood. So similarly, you find Drupada. Drupada, after being defeated by Dronacharya, or more specifically by the Pandav, fighting with the Pandavas. So he wanted to take revenge against Dronacharya. So at that time, Drupada again performs austerities, sacrifice, again performs austerities, and he approaches these two priests, Yaja and Upayaja. When he approaches these two priests, so he expresses to them saying that I have a desire to get a son. And he says the son, the purpose of it is I want to get a son, and he should be able to avenge for, basically he should be able to defeat Dronacharya in battle. So when he approaches Upayaja, the younger of them, who was more powerful and pure, Upayaja says, I will not perform for this reason. This is the reason that you have come for. You wanted a son who would basically kill Dronacharya. I would not perform this yajna. And still Drupada continues to serve them. It is said for about a year he continues to serve them. Of course, initially he offers even some temptation in the form of, he says, I will give you 10,000 cows. They are ornamented cows. And Upayaja says, I will not perform yajna for such reasons. But Drupada continues to serve them for quite some time, for about a year or so. And finally, Upayaja takes pity on him and he says, my elder brother Yaja, I have seen him sometimes eating from the ground, or sometimes eating from the remnants of others, from unclean or fallen on, some fruit fallen on the ground. Also, sometimes I've seen him eating it. So maybe you can approach him, since he's not so conscious about cleanliness. Maybe you can approach him, and if he agrees, he can do that. So Drupada Maharaj, he approaches Yaja. Yaja agrees, as mentioned by Upayaja. But then when Yaja wanted to perform the sacrifice, he needed some assistance. So Yaja approaches his younger brother Upayaja also and says that, why don't you please assist me in performing the sacrifice? So although Upayaja disagreed for Drupada's request that I am not ready to perform this, for the reason that you have quoted, but because his brother requests him for assistance, he agrees to do that. And eventually they go to Kampilya and they perform a great sacrifice. And then we see that how Drishtadumna and Draupadi appear. So we see Marutta wanted to perform this Shankara Yajna, and then eventually you find a heap of mountain gold, mountain of gold, a heap of that, peak of a mountain of gold he gets. Whereas Indra wanted to perform Yajna in order to get his kingdom back. And whereas Drupada wanted to perform Yajna in order to have a son who would kill Drona. Whereas here we find the priests of Nabhi, the kingdom of Nabhi, Ritvij, the priest of the sacrifice, they are performing Yajna in terms of desiring a son for the king, for Nabhi. And the son, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Lord Vishnu. So this is a very pure desire, of course, which Prabhupada mentioned as we saw in the references. Sometimes he calls it as a material desire as well, definitely. But then who have a desire to have a son like God. The priests, we can see a very beautiful qualities that the priests are exhibiting here, which is basically the mood of humility and gratitude, which we can see right from this verse 4 onwards. 4 to 15 is the prayers offered by the priests, where we can see in the verse 7, they say that we have made such grand arrangements for this yajna, but we feel that actually there is no need of such grand arrangements, because ultimately Krishna is Bhavagrahi. So they have made, this is, of course, this is after making the arrangements. Then when the person has that consciousness, that is considered very glorious. In verse 9, they say, you have come causelessly, although we have not worshipped you appropriately or due to our ignorance. They take the fault on themselves, they accept that, and they say, you have come very causelessly. In verse 11, they say, your personal presence is rare even for the demigods or for the great saintly personalities. Thana vilashi tapasis toham tvam praptavan deva munindra, as Guru Maharaj says. Deva munindra guyam, it is difficult even for great demigods or the saintly persons to get darshan. But here, we are so fortunate. You have simply appeared. The priests are saying, oh my Lord, you have appeared in this sacrifice out of your great causeless mercy. And in verse 12, they say, please help us to remember your lotus feet. Please help us to remember your holy names, especially at the time of death. also of always, but especially at the time of death. And the priest, as we see in this last line when the Prabhupada mentions, they knew that the Lord had been invited for to come for some paltry reason. So they feel ashamed that they had to invite the Lord where they are performing a yajna for the king to have a son. So this mood of humility and gratitude is very clearly reflecting in the priests who are offering the sacrifice. And it is this mood which is actually very pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is why we see when the very very soon we'll find the section continues, we'll see the Supreme Lord when he starts speaking how he's pleased on these priests, on the specific prayers that they have offered, which basically goes to show that the Lord is very pleased by the humility and gratitude of the practitioner of the sadhaka. Just recently we've been celebrating Haridas Thakur's disappearance day. So we can find this very, very prominent in Haridas Thakur that, you know, how can somebody feel, how can somebody express, you know, he's saying that, why was I beaten in 22 marketplaces? We were asked a question like this, we would say, yes, actually you say, why was I beaten after the entire lifetime I've been chanting the holy names? Why is it that I'm still beaten in 22 marketplaces, one would complain. But we see Haridas Thakur is saying, he's trying to justify accepting it as his fault, and he's trying to justify that. This is what is it's a great mood, which is it's like a mystery, where Haridas Thakur says, because I heard the blasphemy of the holy names, because I heard that, I was beaten in 22 marketplaces. It's a very amazing consciousness to think about. Haridas Thakur says, in the Mahaprakash Leela to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that, please allow me to get the remnants of your devotees, even in the form of a dog. Let me become a dog so that I can get the remnants of the devotees. And then he says, please forgive me for my impudence, for what I have just asked. But please, if it is possible, but please forgive me for my impudence. That's like how Rupa Goswami and Ratan Goswami pray that, you know, we are like dwarfs trying to touch the moon. So we are so insignificant, but then we still have hope in your mercy. So similarly, Haridas Thakur says, we still have hope that if you can please grant me this. And of course, he says, I don't want to see your closing pastimes, closing Leela from this material world. Please let me leave this mortal world before you leave this planet. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes very emotional, feels very attracted to this great, to this mood of humility and gratitude of Haridas Thakur. And then he says, Krishna will surely fulfill your desires. And then he says, but what about me? You have desired to leave this planet before me. Krishna will surely fulfill your desires. But what about me? And he says, you know, I will miss your association. I will miss your association. And at that time, Haridas Thakur says, my dear Lord, do not try to create an illusion. What loss will be to this material world if an insignificant ant leaves this material world? It is such an amazing consciousness that after performing so much, after being a Namacharya, after practically chanting the holy names of the Lord throughout his life, that they have this consciousness, which is, for a conditioned soul, it's a mystery. But for great souls, it is so natural. It's a natural, just like Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, the iron filings are naturally attracted to the magnet. It's for great souls, this mood of humility is so natural. And for the sadhakas, we may have to attempt to cultivate that. And similarly, the mood of gratitude. We find Sudama, when he goes to meet Lord on the pretext of when his wife requests him that, why don't you please go and meet your friend, your childhood friend? And he feels hesitant. How can I approach Krishna? How can I approach my childhood friend for asking for some wealth, for such a significant reason? But then, of course, his children were struggling. You know, they were in great poverty-stricken condition. And his wife also asked basically for she couldn't tolerate to see the poverty-stricken condition of the children and also of her husband. And she requested. Eventually, when Sudama agrees, so he's still meditating in his mind that no, it's such a paltry reason that I am going. But then he feels, well, maybe I'll get an opportunity to see the Supreme Lord also. So let me he makes up his mind and eventually gets the ship to rise, Poha, and then goes to meet the Lord. And then after meeting the Lord, he stays there for some time. He's just amazed to see how the Lord is reciprocating. He comes to invite Sudama. He places him on the throne. He washes his lotus feet. He's just so satisfied just seeing how Krishna is reciprocating like this. It's like all this priests in the yagya are just satisfied simply seeing the darshan of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So he was just so satisfied, and then he doesn't even ask anything. And then on his return, Sudama is thinking, Kvaham daridra papiyam, kva Krishna Shrinikhetanaha. Kvaham daridra papiyam, I am such a sinful wretch. And Krishna, who is Krishna? Kva Krishna Shrinikhetanaha. He's the husband of Goddess of Fortune. And he says, Brahma Bandhu iti smaham, I am considered to be friend of the Brahman. That he considers, he takes, he puts himself in such an insignificant position. Brahma Bandhu iti smaham, Bahubhyam Parirambita. But still, that Supreme Lord Krishna embraced me. He still embraced me. So this is something that out of great gratitude, he's just happy that the Lord embraced him. The purpose for which he came was basically sent by his wife to ask for some wealth, but he did not ask anything, and he was satisfied by the embrace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because gratitude means that one feels I don't deserve anything. So this great mood of humility and gratitude is something which is so attractive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why we find in the case of Nabi and the priests who are offering prayers here, that although they make such a grand arrangement, at the same time they are pure in their consciousness, like our Bahulashva and such personalities. So thank you very much. I will just quickly summarize that we saw four different aspects. We had a quick recap of this particular context of Priyavrata and Agnidra, and the son of Agnidra in the form of Nabhi is desiring to have a son, is performing sacrifice, and the priests are offering their prayers, and the Supreme Lord has personally appeared in the arena, sacrificial arena. So we saw four subtopics in this, or some subjects in this: wanting to have a son like God, being conscious and considerate of the time involved of great souls and their engagements in inviting. So basically, do not unnecessarily disturb the Lord or his representatives for material gain. Not desire to see whimsically for one's own sense gratification. Do not invite great souls for social functions just for personal prestige. And then we saw the third aspect of priesthood. We saw about Maruta, Indra, Drupada. And the fourth aspect we saw about the mood of humility and gratitude. It is this mood of humility and gratitude which ultimately attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. Grantharashrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaurabhaktavrinda ki jai. Thank you all
There
very
was a
much.
question for you, Praji, on the chat I have given.
Sometime if prasad falls in ground, then what we have to do? And sometime things fall from our hand like fruits or vegetable, then can we offer that to Lord or should we throw that? Well, that depends on the standards that one follows. If the prasad falls on the ground, then what we have to do? Of course, if prasad falls on the ground, then we can pick it up and still honor it. That is, that prasad does not get contaminated. Many times we find the holy places, the holy tirthas, apparently, like Ganges, Yamuna, find apparently people may see it as contaminated, but such holy places, holy tirthas never get contaminated. It's in the material vision that there is contamination, but otherwise, from the perspective of forming etiquettes, especially as a sadhaka, at least if we are not yet realized on that platform, we should be able to see it as very spiritual. So if it has fallen on the ground, we can just still pick it up and try to have it. Of course, depends on the exact particular situation. If it's just in the house, I think should be very clean also. And sometimes things fall from our hand like fruits or vegetables, then can we offer that to the Lord? or should we throw that? As I said, that depends on the standard that one follows. Like if the standard of Raghav Pandit, he would get the coconuts. There would be coconuts in his own farm. And still, he would practically travel about 20 kilometers or so in order to get the fetch, in order to fetch the best of the coconuts. And even after that, if after touching the coconut, if the hand is touched the ceiling or something, then he would feel, oh, this is contaminated. And, you know, he would again want to offer the coconuts. That depends on one's standard. But obviously, on a practical level, we can try to do the needful, as Prabhupada always said. We cannot try to imitate that, but as best as possible, especially if it has fallen from our hand, especially if it is in the house. Generally, the platform is very clean, and generally when the house, the floor is also generally kept clean, especially where there are deities or the Lord hasn't been invited. So eventually, if it is possible to be washed, if the whole thing is there, if it is possible to be washed, then we can. And if it is still not contaminated, we should be able to offer on a practical grounds. Let's do the needful. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Thank you very much for giving this opportunity to be able to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like today is the world is celebrating Teacher's Day. We can offer our prayers and gratitude to all those from whom we have learned in any way, and of course specifically more from the spiritual perspective, and from the perspective of ISKCON world, they are celebrating International Shravanam Week. So it was a great opportunity for me to be able to dive deeply into the Srimad Bhagavatam, and every one of us can take advantage of this particular week, which is designated as International Shravanam Week from the ISKCON perspective. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Bhagavan Ki Jai.